Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
I always feel like Donald Trump with that entrance with the canned applause, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, welcome to Rated LGBT Radio. This is Rob Watson, and I am your host today. And every day on Rated LGBT Radio, I'll be joined very shortly with my co-host Brody Levesque, and we'll be covering some things. Also, our subject today is one that I actually covered on my other radio show out in Santa Cruz, and that is a proposed quote-unquote straight pride event that is being, like I said, it's proposed for August 24th in Modesto, California. And the group behind it is a group called the National Straight Pride Coalition. And their website goes further than just straight pride. Not that that would be bad, it wouldn't be bad enough. But they also on their website have implications of white supremacy and Christian, a la their brand of Christianity, supremacy. And it, you know, it is what it is. The one of the co-founders has gone on to say that there are two religions: there is Christianity and there is LGBT. So, how he came to that conclusion, I don't know, but he did. Anyway, today we're actually going to tell a more personal side of the story. Because as it turns out, the other straight pride organizer, Melinda Mason, has a son, and her son's name is Matthew, and Matthew himself is gay. And that has got to be incredibly painful to have a mother who is supposed to be one of the people on the planet that is loving of you and upholding who you are, to turn around and create this kind of spectacle. So we will be talking to Matthew. We have him online. He is going to be in a car, so we apologize in advance for any sound difficulties we have, but we'll be bringing him on in just a minute. Before that, I do want to introduce my co-host, Brody Levesque. Brody, welcome.
Hey, Rob, and greetings to all of our listeners who may be listening at who knows what hour of the day. One of the things that I wanted to do before we get started with our guest, a friend of mine who's also been a guest on the aforementioned other show out in Santa Cruz, my friend Michelle Dosu, who is, oh, that's right, Michelle was, sorry, I forgot. She's an Emmy Award-winning director. Her film that she won the Emmy for was Matt Shepard is a friend of mine, and she actually went to school at the American School of Switzerland with Matt in high school and was actually a personal friend. But she's back, and this time with a five-part docuseries on Netflix starting August 14th. It's called Happy Jail. And what Michelle and her producer, Liam McNiff, have done is they went inside the Cebu Provincial Detention and Rehabilitation Center, which is a very unique Filipino jail where dancing is actually part of the inmates' exercise and rehabilitation. The facility shot to worldwide fame and notoriety in 2007 with its viral performance of Thriller, which just blew up on YouTube. However, currently, 10 years out, the program for the dancing is running into a little bit of scrutiny when the correctional facility hired an ex-con to run it. So starting August 14 on Netflix will be Happy Jail, and I just hope that all of you will go and watch it. And so it's really exciting for me. Michelle's good people, and as you know, she did a brilliant job with Matt Shepard as a friend of mine. So she, Emmy, went well deserved, and it was just kind of nice to see her come back with Happy Jail. She's been working on this project for a number of years now. She is actually, her parents are from the Philippines. So for her, this is also kind of a little bit of a personal journey, because she returned to the Philippines to actually shoot the film. So we have that. And let's
so Brody, I wanted to shift a little bit, because I wanted to touch base on the three most recent shooting events that have happened around the country, and they kind of are a backdrop for what we're going to be talking about today, because they have an element of threat in terms of the vitriol, like, feeling and racial tensions, and even political concept tensions, especially around an event. So, I mean, that is a real threat on this kind of event inspiring some sort of violence, potentially. I just wanted to get your thoughts on what's happening around those three events.
The Federal Bureau of Investigations, San Francisco Field Office, and in conjunction with the Sacramento Field Office, opened a domestic terrorism investigation into the shooting in Gilroy, California, at the Mushroom Festival in El Paso,
Garlic
Texas.
Festival.
The Garlic Festival.
Sorry,
I don't know. I always tie mushrooms and garlic together. But, well, they're both good together, so we'll just,
Okay.
My apologies to Gilroy for your Garlic Festival. I happen to like mushrooms. In El Paso, Texas, of course, was a shooting at the Walmart, which was definitely racially and xenophobic, and inspired in part, the gunman said, by what the President of the United States has said. But however, the shooter, like the shooter in Gilroy, had spent a lot of time on a forum called 8chan, which is kind of a petri dish, if you will, of some of the worst of white nationalism. And I need to note, while I'm on that, and Matthew will be covering it too, but a lot of the straight pride folks, especially in Massachusetts, of course, in the Modesto area, are big-time white nationalists. So there's a common theme that runs through this. And then the shooting in Dayton, which the Bureau is working in conjunction with the Dayton authorities on that, and they're trying to make a determination. I need to note that all three weapons were assault rifles. All three weapons were purchased legally. And in the case of Dayton, he was using a magazine, which is basically a dual drone, which has the capacity to unload about 100 rounds in probably less than 9 seconds, and under Ohio law, by the way, is legal. To go with this tragedy and the overtones of xenophobia, racism, and white nationalism, the President of the United States yesterday made what should have been a trip to console survivors and family members into a campaign rally. He was critical of local officials. It basically turned into a feces show. And I'm, not entirely shocked by the president's actions, as I think we pretty much determined there's no bottom to the pit of hell with this clown. So him going and turning it into a campaign event and a MAGA event and everything else, I'm not really surprised by. People are, of course, horribly upset by this. There's a talk, again, of doing something in Congress. Unfortunately, there's going to be no getting by Mitch McConnell. Friend of the show and friend of mine, Brandon Wolf, pointed out that Mitch McConnell was given an inordinate amount of money by the National Rifle Association to partly assist in killing legislation that came over from the House that passed that would put common sense gun controls and gun registration and a few other things into place. So, you know, once again, Moscow Mitch has shown that, you know, he only has one interest at heart, and that's his own pocket. So between
right.
the President of the United States, who turned it into a campaign event, which is to be expected because the man has no morals and he's basically just a huge slug, and Moscow Mitch, you know, once again, here we are. But the thing that's more frightening, besides the political angle, and this goes directly to what Matthew's going to be talking about, because I reported on some stories in the Modesto area where the LGBT and the trans community in particular were targeted. This straight pride is a red herring. And the people that are involved with it, the organizers, are members of the Proud Boys. Some of them have been found on the 8chan site that currently, by the way, has been shut down by its internet provider. They shut it off for now. So it's a situation that I don't think Grimm adequately covers it. The tragedy.
It actually should be. It actually should be noted, Brody, that even the Proud Boys have disavowed this event. Is they used their name, and then the Proud Boys came back and said, we don't authorize this. So it's even a step beyond Proud Boys.
That's, you know, the public face of it, and good for them. Do I believe it? No. If I sound like I'm cynical, it's because I've been a reporter for too long. I mean, I'm glad they made the proclamation to disavow and distance themselves from it, but do I actually physically believe that? Of course not. You know, the old saying that we used to have, you know, is that my mother may have raised ugly kids, but she didn't raise dumb ones, which applies to me. And I'm sorry, I don't buy that. You know, this tragedy.
Well, I'm not singing their praises over it. I'm just saying that this is that bad.
Even the Proud Boys don't even want to do it. It's really bad. And the tragedy of the shootings is, besides the human costs and things, is that the studied indifference by the elected officials is just, you know, and then the President of the United States telling a former elected official who actually represented that particular area of El Paso to sit down and be quiet, you know, I don't know. It's just beyond the pale. But, yeah, so that's been the last few days.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for that. And with that, I'd like to bring on Matthew to tell us his story and everything that's going on there. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. So, Matthew, when did you first hear of your mom's plans for this event?
About 2 weeks ago, I would have to say. A friend of mine sent me a press release that she had found via Facebook Messenger, and I was like, oh, that's nice. Melinda's up to her old tricks again.
Well,
and then it
so,
was
you...
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask, can you give us a kind of feeling for what the relationship is with your mom? I think you guys are obviously not talking every day. That's an understatement, I'm sure.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in 3 years, since 2016. Yeah, she'll text every few months, and it's usually to offer thoughts and prayers.
Was this estrangement due to you coming out?
Partially. I came out when I was 19. I'm 28 now. And after I came out, I was no longer welcome to live at home. However, I was welcome to interact with the family. So I did for several years. It was my hope that trying to foster a relationship with Melinda might do some good for her, and we could have a relationship as a loving mother and son. But then about 3 years ago, I just realized that I was the one doing all the work and she wasn't giving any of it back. So we parted ways.
And Melinda is your adopted mom, correct?
Correct. I was adopted at birth.
At birth, okay. Because ironically, your birth mom actually plays into the the scenario here as well, as your mom, your birth mom, is on the city council that is considering the permit for this event, right?
That is correct. And I would like to point out that she is the only city council member to have taken a personal stand against this event.
So you heard about it 2 weeks ago, and what was your reaction? What did you think?
Well, my reaction was, well, she's up to her old tricks again. And then my response was, let's not say anything about this, and maybe it'll just fall flat on its face. So that worked for about 2 days. Then it hit social media, really took off. And then I realized that that I was in a very unique position to challenge and work against this event and the rhetoric behind it, which is white supremacist rhetoric at its core. So, yeah, here we are.
No, absolutely. Yeah, here we are. I made the observation in our promo for the show, and I've noticed this before, that many times anti-gay homophobic activists have a very close family member who is gay or LGBT. Do you think your mom is doing this as a way to get a message to you?
No. She's gotten her message to me. I know exactly how she feels about me. She says she adores me, but she doesn't adore all of me. I kind of like all the love.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you, and you deserve all the love.
So, yeah, it's intense. She is a narcissist, so she is absolutely convinced that what she believes is truth. And I'm like, yes, it's her truth, but that doesn't mean that she needs to actively work against other people. And I've tried to have this conversation with her before, and it's just never gone well. She's like, well, I have freedom of speech. And I'm like, yes, you do have freedom of speech. You also have to deal with the consequences of that speech. And if you're going to be hateful to everyone who is different than you, then you're not going to get any real work done in the world, because you don't have a positive message. It's not attractive. That doesn't get through to her.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I relate a lot to, you know, your pain. My folks many years ago when I came out were not, you know, receptive at all, and it took many, many years to build bridges, and ultimately they did come around and were more than supportive. I mean, they were embracing.
Awesome.
What was her, you know, when you first came out and she knew, what came out of her? Was it pain? Was it anger? Was it, what was her emotional reaction to you being gay?
Pain, anger, disappointment. When she truly believed that in the concept of hell, and that people are not a certain type of Christian, they're going to go to hell for eternity. And so that was her response to me. Well, as long as you're living in this lifestyle, you can be right with the Lord. So you're going to go to hell. And I can understand how there's a fear on her part there. I can see how you're absolutely convinced that all LGBT people are going to hell, and a family member is a member of that community, then, yeah, there's a sense of loss. And Melinda and I have talked about this before, and at times she can be quite reasonable. At other times, not so much.
Right.
And I've tried to explain to her that being gay is not a cardinal sin. And we've had a lot of, she's a very religious person. I was raised to be a very religious person as well. And so we have a lot of conversations about what the Bible says. And of course, she always goes to the, goes to Leviticus, and she talks about how it is an abomination for a man to lie with a man. And my argument to her is, well, what did Jesus come to the world to die for if it wasn't to cover that old law? In her religious communities, like, the death of Jesus Christ is considered to be a covenant, and it's a covenant for all people. But she doesn't get that part of Christianity. She gets the judgment and the rules, but she doesn't get the redemptive message of love and empathy and compassion and inclusion that is encapsulated in Jesus Christ. So her and I have had a lot of conversations about this. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I hear you, because I'm also Christian, and I have had to deal with all those passages. Ironically, and I'll ask you this in a little bit of a ironic sense, has she ever eaten lobster or shrimp or any of those kind of meals?
Well, worn mixed blends and cut her hair and worn makeup and golden jewelry? Why, yes, she has.
Yeah, because the word used to describe man lying with man in Leviticus, two pages earlier in that chapter, uses the exact same word to describe eating shellfish. And so they're virtually, you know, scripturally, if you're going to be, you know, letter to the law, there's no difference in the two. And the words themselves mean ritually unclean. So it's
right.
There's more complexity as to what that tradition was about. But you're right. I mean, it's like there are six what they call clobber verses in the Bible, and
right.
Those verses are, none of them are pointedly clear. They're all very vague, and you know, you need to look at the context both historically and literal, the way they're presented.
And
none of them,
including all that linguistically. Including all of that linguistically, I mean, this is a translation from a language which does not use space or punctuation. It is a constant stream of letters. It is incredibly easy to mistranslate and get the grammatical context wrong with the English translation.
No, absolutely. And it's ironic because what you were talking about, her faith, that they look at the crucifixion and the resurrection as a covenant. Because if you go to the book of Hebrews in the Bible, it talks about the new covenant, and the new covenant talks about the God's law, and it states specifically that God's law is written on the mind and the heart. And so for me, that is a clear indication for those of us who are LGBT, who happen to have faith, that our law, the law of God, is not in these discussions about scripture and what was interpreted or whatever. God's law was written directly to us, directions to us. And those of us, like you were saying before, who know we are good people, that we just happen to have this instinct of being, you know, gay, that was given to us by God. And the Bible actually supports that by saying we need to be able to testify to what was written on our mind and our heart.
Right.
I mean, that's biblical. So anyway,
absolutely.
Just supporting you there, brother. I mean, you know, it's like,
thank you.
So
nice little theology discussion.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Brody, did you want to jump in here? Do you have any questions?
Well, I wanted to talk to Matthew for a minute about the situation on the ground in Modesto itself in that part of California. Earlier this summer, we did some reporting on the Trans Day of Awareness. There were some members of the trans community in North Fresno, and they were more or less attacked by the same kind of folks that will be participating in the Pride celebration of straight Pride by doing what they call rolling coal. They're driving diesel-powered trucks and blowing black, acrid smoke all over these trans activists. There's been a couple of situations in Modesto of incidences that have taken place that, while they haven't fallen into the severity of being classified as hate crimes, have definitely been of a hateful nature. Matthew, what's the temperature on the ground? And you know, people like your daughter, it's been my experience as a reporter that it's not just the gay people that they don't like too much. It's like the Muslims and it's like the little brown folks.
Right.
And, you
the
know,
Muslims.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. So, like, if you go to the National Straight Pride Coalition and you read the manifesto they have on their website, it's a little more sanitized now, slightly. You'll see that the groups of people, or the things that they that they are fighting for, is Caucasian, Christian, white, Western, a masculine, feminine, frankly archaic idea of gender identity. These are all, this is a very huge microcosm of things that I have been hearing the radical right wing talking about for my entire life. The radical right wing sect of whatever political identity Melinda Mason has, she identifies as Republican, and she does consider herself to be a true Republican. She has always spoken negatively about Muslims, about Sikhs, about transgender people that she sees in public. If she sees a gay person, gay people holding hands, lesbians holding hands, she will almost always make a scene. So, but this is the vocal side of this fringe group of people. Melinda is the voice. There is a much more insidious network of political identity, which we are really only just now starting to see. And it goes a lot deeper than I think we see that it does.
Yeah. Well,
how big?
Deeper,
so,
I mean, yeah, let's dig in there. I mean, you know, we've been spending a lot of time in the last few days as a result of these mass shootings taking a really hard look at 8chan. We've been taking a very hard look at the people that will be participating in the Straight Pride thing in Modesto, as well as the Straight Pride in Massachusetts. You know, give me your perception of what you're seeing, Matt.
What I'm seeing is blatant white supremacy that is being given a platform to be seen and heard in society. People are emboldened when they see other people speaking to a certain ideology, in this case, white supremacy. So Donald Trump gets up and he says that we should send the four women of color in Congress back to where they came from, send them back to their country. I think it was just days after that, a Sikh priest was attacked in his home on temple grounds by a man telling him to go back to where he came from, go back to his country. So these sort of dog whistles always incite violence. The dog whistling that we've seen from an increasingly vocal sect of the Republican Party is really inciting violence in a lot of people who just have hatred for people who are different, whether that be a different color, a different gender identity, a different religion, a different sexual identity. these people are being radicalized. I mean, we will talk on and on about how ISIS is radicalizing people, but this white supremacist rhetoric is radicalizing white men in our country at far greater rates than ISIS ever has.
And we should note in Central California, where you are, that that it's not – people think of California as being liberal and everything else. That is not the liberal part of the
state. Oh, not in the Central Valley.
So it's pretty core. Last night was the city council meeting, I believe, to review this. Were you there? And what if you weren't, what did you hear? Yeah. How did it go?
I was there, and I just have to tell you, it was some of the best theater I have ever seen. It was absolutely brilliant. So I've been organizing and marketing this candlelight vigil that was going to happen before the city council meeting. So we all met in Center Plaza right outside City Hall at 5 o'clock. And we ended up having about 150 people gathered outside City Hall. It wasn't just candles. It ended up being candles and glow sticks and bubbles. And some people brought some electric candles. So it ended up being a really positive bonding moment for this community who has really been put into a place of fear surrounding this event. So the vigil went really well, great turnout, a lot of media coverage. And then we went into the meeting, and I loved that the first thing, one of the first things on the agenda was celebrating a Japanese United States student exchange program. So all of these children, students from Japan, came, saw city council, talked about how they had enjoyed visiting California, and they were applauded by the entire group. Then public comment started. And Dom Grundman, the founder of the National Straight Pride Coalition, was one of the first speakers. So, word to the wise, if you're in public speaking at all, try not to go off script. It gets real messy, real quick. So, he gets up. First thing he does is blast the mayor and Christy Ayu, one of the council members. I'm not sure what he was blasting the mayor for. I think just general city person. There's video. It is fantastic video. So he starts yelling at Christy Ayu and has the most classic Freudian slip I have ever heard. He literally starts rambling and says, "We are a peaceful racist group." he got so much applause. The city chambers were packed. Every seat was full, standing room only. And the mayor actually had to pound his gavel a couple times to get everyone to stop laughing, because it was one of the funniest things that I've ever seen, and I am going to remember it for the rest of my life. Because wow. After that, he then turned to a group of black community organizers that were sitting nearby him and said, "You shouldn't be mad at me for being racist. You should be mad at Planned Parenthood for killing all the black babies." Which got another response from everyone else in the audience. I had to, try to get people to quiet down, because you're not supposed to be raucous in city council chambers. But
right.
He basically just realized that he'd gone completely off script, on camera, made a terrible gaffe, and he just turned around and walked out of the city council chambers, and I guess went home.
Wow. Was he there alone? Yes. Was he the only representative of the quote unquote cause?
No, there were a couple of other individuals. One was a retired business owner in the city, and the other one was just a concerned Christian who wanted to practice his religious freedom. And I was very surprised because they were trying to sell it as like a church service, and it was very interesting, like the way they're marketing this, because like on the face of it, it's extremely white supremacist rhetoric, but then the facade they try to put in front of it is, well, we're just straight people who want to have a church service.
Which begs
baffling
the question,
how they're running
that. Yeah, if that's what they are doing, why don't they just go have a church service?
Right. I mean, like,
sort of, yeah.
We have a lot of churches around here, and they're all open on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So, go have your church
service.
What
do you see the reaction? Yeah, what did you see the reaction of the city council being to the spectacle?
There were a couple of WTF faces. They're generally pretty good at just keeping a very stoic, this very stoic facade. But Councilmember Ayu was like very polite and attentive to Mr. Grundman while he was attacking her. But she did have to laugh when he said they were a peaceful racist group. So city council in our city government here doesn't really make a decision on the permit application. So there was no reason for them to take a vote. However, they can the city council will work as an entity with other groups to make decisions. So. The permit has been referred over to the city attorney, who will be reviewing it. They will be reviewing that with the police department to see what sort of response is needed. So the event may go forward, but there were a lot of suggestions made that I think would be very helpful. One of them was that the National Straight Pride Coalition should. Sorry, I had to grab a sip of water. The National Straight Pride Coalition should foot the bill for the security. One or two years ago, Ann Coulter came to town, and that ended up costing the city about $70,000 in security. This event would probably pull the same, if not more. So,
right.
When I spoke to the city council, I recommended that they require them to foot the bill. Change the venue because the park that they are requesting to hold this event at, Griseida Park, there's a reason they chose that park. It's right in the middle of town. It is an iconic, it contains the Mancini Bowl, which is an iconic structure in Modesto history. It's also a community gathering place. So people are always using that people are always using that park for things like baby showers. For example, there is a baby shower happening in the same park, feet away from Mancini Bowl, at the same time as the proposed Straight Pride Festival. Excuse me real quick. I need to take a cough. I'm back. Sorry about that.
No problem. No problem. So Matthew, one of the things that's been kind of said, not just in Modesto, but in Boston, where they had a similar petition, was, we can't prohibit somebody because we don't agree with what they're saying, et cetera, et cetera. Is it your sense that if the Ku Klux Klan or a Nazi party came to town and said, we want to hold a pro-Nazi or pro-Klan event, that the city council would allow those permits because we can't disagree. We can't get involved in what they're actually saying. We have to give equal access. I know you don't know the definitive answer to that, but just your sense.
Right. So my sense of, are you asking for my sense of what the city's going to do?
Of what they would do in that, in those situations. If they were Nazis or Ku Klux Klan members asking for the same thing.
One of the members of the community stood up during public comment, and she was talking about how back in the 80s, the Ku Klux Klan did try to have a rally in Modesto, and apparently that event got denied. So if she is correct, that would set a precedent for denying a hate event, a white supremacist event.
Right.
So I don't know if this current city administration will follow that precedent, but I hope they do. I'm not holding my breath though.
Yeah.
They might require that the group move to a less central part of town, a fenced-in park, perhaps, so that they're just separated from everything. The city can also require them to pay for the security for the event, which I think would be a pretty big detriment to their ability to hold it. Principle of it, it's reasonable. I mean, if it's being marketed as a religious event, then taxpayer dollars have no business being spent on a religious event.
No, absolutely.
And I mean, someone else that spoke up during public comment is also an organizer, and she has organized Pride before here in Modesto. And she was talking about how they were required to pay for the security for their event. So the people holding this event should be required to pay for the security for their event.
I think that's fair. I really do.
Yeah.
Last night at city during the city council meeting, did anybody bring up the, you know, thank you, Captain Obvious moment, but why a straight pride event in the first place, since the overwhelming majority of human beings on the face of the planet are, wait for it, heterosexual? You know, it's like,
right.
You know, is there any particular reason that we need to further marginalize, okay, a small community of folks, percentage wise? All right.
Right.
When you get down to the hard question, is why do we have to have a straight pride event when most people are in fact straight? Okay. Suddenly it becomes an issue of you catch them stumbling over what I refer to as the gay people and trans people are icky. You know, they desperately find other ways to say that. Okay, it's
right.
The same type of thing that they do, you know, when they are marginalizing members of the Jewish community, when they are marginalizing members of the Black, the Latino communities, the Asian communities. You know, this seems to be, you know, the whole thing. You can't walk away from the fact, especially not in Central California, that, you know, we're ringing bells and whistles. This isn't about religious freedom. You have your religious freedom. You have your First Amendment rights. Okay. Why is it so necessary, okay, to say, okay, well, we're going to have this straight pride celebration for what reason? Okay. You know, it's just like, exactly what is your justification, okay, for celebrating what you people keep saying is the norm? Did anybody manage to bring that up in the audience? It sounds to me like, okay, I was just curious because
brought up a couple of times, and the message here is that the Pride festivals, as we know them, are built
out of struggle. People have overcome oppression and come out stronger and prouder because of it. So where is the struggle for the straight white Christians in America? What are you proud of doing? Someone, I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was just a brilliant quote, and I'm going to try and do it justice right now. When the marginalized march, it is because they have been oppressed. When the non-marginalized march, it is to be oppressive. That is not a direct quote, but I think I did it justice.
Yeah, I think your point was well taken with it, and it is evident there. When the gentleman who did speak started speaking, did he focus at all on the straight pride aspect of it? Because so much of what I hear in terms of their rhetoric has as much to do with abortion, race, Christianity asserting itself in society, all of these other things that really have almost nothing to do with what most people's experience of heterosexuality is.
Right. When you're referring to the guy who was speaking, are you referring to the organizer, Don?
Yes.
Yes, he did touch on all of those things. When they say they're protecting babies, they're protecting unborn babies and reducing a woman's bodily autonomy and right to choose. And he did reference that. He did make a dig at Planned Parenthood and at the same time the black community. That was pretty impressive. You got two for one right there.
Right.
And he did touch on masculinity and femininity, that entire gender dichotomy where everyone is lockstep, you are one or two. Yeah, generally it's just like there was a sense of disregard for other communities. I remember one gentleman in support of the event got up and he stumbled over the LGBTQIA+ acronym. I mean, it's fair, it's a long acronym, but it was like a dismissive LGBTXYZ2 sort of thing. And it's just
right.
I mean, we can call each other on our politics and how we are presenting ourselves politically and in civil discourse, but there's really no need to be flippant or rude about it. I mean, when I got up and I called Don Grundman a right-wing fascist from the Bay Area who was using Modesto as a springboard for his political campaign of hate. Yeah. I mean, that's respectful. I'm just calling it like I see it.
Right, exactly. I did want to ask you about that point that you just raised. How did the city council feel about what, let's say this goes on and gets some notoriety, does Modesto really want to be known as the place that hosts straight pride in California? I mean, is that what they want as part of their city brand?
You know, it's really interesting you say that because the city just spent a couple million dollars on how to brand themselves. And yeah, supporting white supremacy wasn't part of that. And a couple of people got up during public comment and said just that. And it's also worthwhile to note that Gallo Winery, one of the largest wineries in the world and the biggest employer in the Modesto area, put out a statement condemning the event. They don't do that.
they don't generally comment on what's going on in the community unless it is bringing harm and fear to their employee base. So it's really interesting to note that Gallo has put out a condemnation of this event. Yeah, this would definitely look really bad on Modesto's brand, especially with what we're trying to do right now. Like, the city has been really doing a lot to promote its downtown culture, its food culture, its nightlife, its safe sort of small town feel to it. So they're really trying to brand this. And a lot of people pointed out that this does not fit into that brand. So
no,
it's I really can't speak to how like the mayor and city council feel about this issue. I can only speak to like the people who are a part of that issue, who are out here condemning this event.
Yeah, I can tell you just from being on the Central Coast that, you know, this is what we're hearing about Modesto. I mean, and it's, you know, and it does, that will taint the town. I mean, from the perception
right.
of those of us who are the neighbors around watching and listening. Brody, did you have a point
right.
you wanted to make?
Well, actually, I wanted to follow up on something, you know, in terms of, you know, impact. And I'm going to shift this back into, you know, a more personal note here for you, Matt. Does your mother not understand, being a religious person, that she, with her very attitude and actions like this, causes harm to LGBTQI youth who are already in the jackpot because of adolescence, because of their sexual orientation or their gender identity? You know, we have a high ratio of suicide. We have a high homelessness ratio. There are kids right now on these streets of Modesto that the only reason they are on the streets of Modesto is because they are gay and they were kicked out of their homes. Does she just not care about
yep.
this?
I don't think so. I think if you were – I have said that to her before. I have said – So a few years ago, she actually ran for Modesto City School Board, Melinda did, and it also was a homophobic mess. And I talked to her and I was like, you really need to think about how you're, like, the role that you want and how you sell yourself to that. I mean, you are condemning a huge demographic of children, like not just gay youth, trans youth, bi youth, lesbian girls, non-binary youth, like the entire gamut of sexual and gender identity is just completely ignored. And that I'm like, do you not understand that you need to serve these children? How are you going to be a servant to these children if you hate them? And she was like, well, they just shouldn't be gay. And I was like, okay. And beyond that, she also believes that you just should never talk about gay people, LGBT issues, in the schools. She says that the parents right. And I'm just like, yeah. So did I mention that I was homeschooled by her for all 12 years of school?
No, you didn't.
No.
Yeah.
So you must have, and we only have a few more minutes left here, Matthew. So that
Darn
must
it.
Have been, did, as you were growing up, did she present that as a negative for you? You know, don't be gay when you grow up?
Yeah, in a big way. So for quite a few years when I was a teenager, I was forced to go with her to a rainbow prom in Hayward and picket it. So she will literally go to prom where adolescents are with other grown adults
and hold up signs telling these children that they're going to hell. She made me do that.
That's so intense. That is, I mean, we're bordering Fred Phelps territory.
I mean,
that's,
oh, absolutely. They think Fred Phelps is great.
I don't even know what to say to you about that one. I've had my own personal experience on one end with Westboro, so
Matthew, I sorry to cut you off, Brody, but we are literally just like 3 minutes out here. Matthew, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Our hearts go out to you for as painful as this has got to be for you, and with absolutely admiration and you standing up for it. And you are welcome back here anytime. You're great, and we throw affection your way. Brody, I want to
thank
you.
Love and support. Love and support.
Love and support. Absolutely. Brody, thank you so much for everything you do. And I want to thank our listeners. And I would encourage you, if you're hearing this, call up Modesto City Council and let them know your view as outsiders and to what taint this will paint Modesto. I think they need to hear from you. I want to thank you for listening. As always, tell your friends about the podcast. You can find our podcast on any smartphone in this podcast app. Just do a search for Rated LGBT Radio and do a subscribe, and then you will get our podcast served up to you whenever they become available, which is once a week. We do publish out on Thursdays, available at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and also listen to Out in Santa Cruz. That broadcasts live on Saturday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can hear that on www.kseo.com. So again, Matthew, thank you again so much for being on with us. Your story needs to be told over and over again. And I really think there's a TV movie of the week, although that just dated me, probably a Netflix film on your story between your that should be told after this is all said and done. So again, for our listeners, tune in next week. We will be back here, same place, same time. You can find us then, and thank you so very much for tuning in.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.